Hello and welcome to the Majlis, the Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I am Mohamed Tahir, director of the Turkmen service at Radio Free Europe. The June 5 was another explosive day in Kazakhstan when northwestern city of Aktobe witnessed a violent day which left at least 18 people dead. Aktobe is also known as a city where Kazakhstan witnessed its first suicide attack back in 2011. And is also not far from another city that is called Janusan, which has seen bloody clashes between security forces and those whom Kazakh government would call terrorists in the same year in 2011. Today in the Majlis, we are planning to discuss and analyze why so many bad things are happening in Western Kazakhstan. What makes those region different from the other parts of the country? What is common between those incidents? And what does those incidents tell us about the future? To discuss the subject, joining me from Astana, Aygrim Tolikhanova, Kazakhstan reporter for the Convoy Bulletin. Aygrim, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you.
Norbert Beysanov, Central Asia reporter for BNE Intelli News, is also joining us today. Norbert, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you, Mohammed.
Thank you for being part of us, Aygrim and Norbert. And also, I have Bruce Panier here, editor of Kishlak Awazi, Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Majlis. First, let us talk a little bit about the June 5 events in Aktobe. Do we know at this stage what happened there, Norbert?
To tell the truth, we aren't authorities labeling people who first attacked firearms shop and then tried to attack a military base, despite authorities branding them as terrorists. We, to tell the truth, we don't know who these people are and what their goals were. So, but in general, the origins of such events, we've seen huge land protests in Kazakhstan. The origins of such events is a huge poor-rich divide and the gap that has emerged between ordinary people and the authorities, which, of course, has been exacerbated by the ongoing economic crisis, which in turn was caused by low oil and other commodities. And now Kazakh economy is dependent on oil and gas and other minerals. So in my opinion, the problem that caused that what government says terrorist attack is in this huge poor-rich divide.
I agree. The red level of security threat remains in effect in Aktobe. Also, operations continue. What do you know about the operations and how life looks like today in Aktobe?
As far as I know, today there were reported some attacks on kindergarten and another place related to children. But we are getting very confusing messages from our authorities. For example, our security service said confirmed one attack, while Ministry of Internal Affairs denied that this had happened. So people here are really getting confused what's going on in Aktobe. But as far as I know, I have some relatives there, so the pressure and this tension is still continuing. Although people are still going to work and do their usual things, they're still very afraid because they really heard all these shootings right in front of their homes and in parks, and they think that it may happen again.
No, but as Aygrim said, and as we are getting news from Kazakhstan, that operation continues in Aktobe. So when they say operation continues, against whom, Norbert, do you know? Do you have any idea what kind of operation is that and against whom this operation is taking place?
As I said, it's not clear who those young men, who authorities are carrying out this, what they say, anti-terrorist operation are. But it's very easy for the authorities to blame this sort of attacks or incidents on radical Islamists, because radical Islamists, in a way, are a very easy target. There is no denial that increasingly more young people are turning to religion as an alternative to the secular but corrupt style of government they are offered. So, on the other hand, the lack of opportunities to freely exercise their religious needs outside the government-sponsored establishments drives young people underground, where informal religious leaders, be local or from abroad, may well indoctrinate them with radical ideas. And today, President Nazarbayev made a vague link between these attacks and alleged bid to overthrow him through land protests a few weeks ago, implying that creating instability in Kazakhstan was the goal of both this armed attack and land protest. But this is a theory that remains to be tested.
Right. Bruce, some dubious organization claimed responsibility or authorities blamed them in conducting this acts. But I guess no one even would like to acknowledge that claim. So what are the genuine assumptions from your point of view? Who were those attackers? Something has happened there.
Well, agreed. Yeah. Something. Let me jump in. Something did happen, and there's no doubt about that. You know, the thing that strikes me most about the what's happened in the day since the actual attack is that although we know the names of these people and we even have pictures of them, the Kazakh government hasn't provided any link. How did these people all know each other? And they you know, we know that they're all from Aktobe or that area. So what is it that brought them together? Did they work together? Did they study together? Do they live in the same neighborhood? We don't know because they aren't providing any of these details. You mentioned that there was one claim of responsibility, and I'll just say right away that that was absolutely a hoax. No one ever heard of these guys, the Liberation Army of Kazakhstan. I mean, it looked bad from the start. Even Kazakh officials have said that's not them. But now who these guys are that did carry it out and what motivated them is something totally different. If it was indeed religious radicals, as some people in the Kazakh government have suggested, then why has there's been no claim of responsibility from any group inside or outside the country beyond this hoax group? You know, they were behind this. So we're kind of left in a void here where, you know, a bunch of young guys basically rob a store and get a bunch of guns and then decide to attack a military base. Why? We don't know. You know, was it planned from outside? Well, you know, even the few videos that we've seen seem to indicate they had no training. They hadn't really worked together for an operation like this. And like I said, we have zero claim of responsibility. No one has put up any credible claim of responsibility for who did this or what the purpose was.
In terms of purpose, Novak, is there anything you can add? I mean, what was the demand of those guys? What they wanted when they started shooting or fighting with security officers? They should have said something. Somebody should have heard they are talking. So any idea what their demands were?
As Bruce has just now suggested, that we don't know any details of their demands or goals. And we, as we've seen in other places, if they're Islamic radicals, they would have shouted Allahu Akbar or some other slogan. So it's really hard to identify these people as members of any group or what these group's goals were. So to tell the truth, I have no idea what kind of aims this group of people tried to achieve.
I agree.
They didn't say anything, but I think that even though they didn't say anything, they showed it with their actions. They attacked, first of all, kind of official places like military buildings, and they're kind of attacking the government. So, and later on we get the information that the responsibility for this is some Army of Liberation of Kazakhstan, although it was denied later by the security forces. But still, maybe there is some tendency to show the government that they don't like something, because there are many problems in Kazakhstan. But as far as I feel, sometimes governments kind of pay attention more to international reputation and at the same time saying that everything is good and stable inside the country, and even those recent claims that it's outside forces that are responsible for this attack is also kind of showing us that government denies that anything is wrong inside the country. It's everything from outside. But we can't ignore our internal problems.
Right. Yeah, obviously, there are lots of problems, and we have seen that over the past several weeks from the protests of people. But sorry for being stuck in this and identity of these people. So at this stage, we know that there are some pictures being circulated in the society, circulated by the authorities, obviously. So can we establish a background of at least one or two of them? Who are they? From which portion of society are they coming? What kind of religious belief they have? How many? There are pictures of several people are being on
more
the public
20.
Right now,
more
I believe.
More than 20.
Norbert, do you have any idea about background of any of those 20 individuals?
I looking at their pictures and reading information about them, I can only suggest they might be jobless young people who might have been seen attending or seen in a group of some religious people. If you look at their ages, they are in their early 20s, between 20 and 30. These are very, again, easy target for the authorities to blame them as members of radical groups. But just looking at their pictures and little information about their biographies, it could be any person living in or in Accra or in Almaty. So to tell the truth, I have no idea who these young people might be and what their aims might be.
Aygerim, you want to say something? Otherwise, I have some question for you. Go on.
Yeah. When there was a release of suspected attackers, some of the local journalists, they checked their social media accounts of some of the attackers. Of course, the majority of them were younger, but some of them were around 40 years old. And it's not me, but some journalists concluded that based on the monitoring of their social media posts in Skontakte, for example, their posts were mostly together with religion. They will post about some women and stuff, and they concluded that potential terrorists are kind of afraid of sex or something like that. And they have this immature attitude to it. And it was their conclusion. But I think that it's very hard to define the potential attacker, the potential extremist, because they can live together peacefully with us, and we may not know that they have this crazy thought in their mind. For example, one of my friends in October, she said that one of the release list of these attackers was his friend, and he was himself shocked. So we really don't know these people, and this attack shows us how undercover this issue is in Kazakhstan and how it's under research. We need to pay more attention to the development of radicalism, especially in the West Kazakhstan.
Rusa, I guess most of the people who are in the wanted list of the Kazakh authorities seems to be from Kazakhstan. And in the meantime, just a few minutes ago, you were telling me that the Kazakh president is also establishing some kind of international connection to this group. What does it say to you?
Yeah, you know, and Aygerim mentioned a little bit about that just a few minutes ago. That Nazarbayev's trying to portray this as being sponsored by somebody outside the country. It's the classic response from the Kazakh government lately. It was the same with the protest. The Kazakh people, in their view, have no reason to be discontented at all. And so any unrest that might be present in the country is surely the result of somebody outside the country prodding some fringe group to try to make some trouble. There's really no evidence of that at all. And if we look at these guys, you know, Nazarbayev's going to say this was all planned outside the country. There doesn't seem to really have been much of a plan. If you're planning something outside the country, wouldn't you have sent these people some money or something like that. You know, and let's just look at their first act was to rob a gun store. So obviously they didn't have weapons. They didn't have money to buy weapons, which if you were going to attack a military base, you would have thought that at least they would have sent the money so that they would have already had guns and then gone to the military base instead of already alerting all the local authorities and law enforcement to their presence by attacking a gun store, robbing it, and then going out after the military base. Like I said, they don't seem to really have had very much of a plan. I agree that it's clearly an expression of anti-government sentiment on some level, and we don't know what caused that. You know, I've seen speculation that maybe they thought they would attack the military base and then they would get better guns or something, but that doesn't really add up very much. The videos seem to show that a lot of them were carrying shotguns, for instance. A shotgun doesn't have that much range. Somebody has to be pretty close to you before you can do any damage with a shotgun or kill them. And to try to go after people with automatic weapons or heavy automatic weapons with a shotgun is a suicide mission. There's no way. You might get close enough to one to get him, but the rest of them could shoot you down from hundreds of meters away. So that doesn't make any sense either. So if this was, I can't possibly believe this was planned from outside the country. It just seems to have been thrown together very quickly. They needed to rob a store to get their own weapons. There's no hint that they had any money sent from outside the country. No, and so I can't believe that they had a plan sent from outside the country that they were supposed to enact at a certain time. There was no organization, no order to their what was basically just a carnage.
Yeah, so confusing. No, but so what is the best possible scenario the likelihood of a group like this might be motivated from to do an act like this?
I can add to Bruce, to what has just Bruce said, that soon after land protests, RIA Novosti, Russian news agency RIA Novosti, reported that some hackers hacked the website of Orenburg Region Administration, which borders Aktobe, and placed information that along the border between Russia and Kazakhstan, they were being planned some terrorist activities, attacks, and so on. So, and some local observers suggest that this situation might be in the interest of, say, of Russia, because Kazakhstan has been a little bit independent in its actions towards the Eurasian Economic Union. So, whether Russian authorities are interested in this sort of instability in Kazakhstan or not, we can't say, but for some reason those land protests were linked to some terrorist activity along the border, and now what we see is a bunch of young people running around with arms in Aktobe. So, tell the truth, as Bruce said, if there had been some support from abroad, those young people would have been more organized.
We have to wrap up our first half of the discussion, but the final question comes to my mind after this discussion is, Aygrim, you know, operation obviously continues, but the fighting seems to be over. So at this stage, looking back, what do you say who benefited from this confusion, this fighting, this situation in October?
Well, maybe the people want to destabilize the country. I don't really know. But I think if there is not a big level of provocative actions, there are certain messages that are sending out to people, for example, by using WhatsApp or SMS. People are getting some messages about fake things or fake, information, and people believe it and start to panic. So I think that some people who are doing all of this are benefiting in this situation where authorities don't understand what to do now and people don't understand what authorities are saying. I mean, this last confusing information, and they are using this overall confusion for their benefit.
Bruce, I want to end this part, but again, interesting things are being said. So one thing is in terms of benefit, in terms of the identity of this group, the confusion there remains, but also confusion on the authorities' part. Everyone is saying something different. So it looks like Kazakh government and authorities were not ready to deal with a situation like this, or what that confusion tells you.
Yeah, there seems to be problems in the chain of command about the information that's coming out of Aktu Bay and who's getting it and who's passing it on to the president. You know, we had this, as Aygurim mentioned, video of the Kazakh president speaking with the head of the security service and the head of the security service saying there was shooting going on at a children's summer camp. And then the interior ministry coming out not long after that and saying, no, it didn't even happen. And you're like, well, who's processing this information and bringing it across? So, you know, it shows that there's a real problem of from one section of the government to communicate with another, and maybe that explains Nazarbayev's what would seem like a very long absence from public view. You know, he didn't say anything about this until today, and everything happens. You know, this is Wednesday, and the events happened Sunday, and this is the first time we've even heard of him. So they seem to be having a hard time communicating amongst their own ministries and law enforcement agencies at the moment, and trying to come up with a single narrative of exactly what has gone on in this country. And that might just reflect the fact that they really just don't know where to even start to look for this, because it really does look... I can't blame the Kazakh authorities too much for not being prepared for this, because who could be prepared for this? It just came out of nowhere. No one... Yeah, I don't think... It might have been an angry element that didn't fully express itself during the protest, but I don't connect this with the protests of a couple weeks ago anyway. That there was that sentiment, but you can't say that the protest evolved into this. It only happened in one place.
Okay, thank you very much, Bruce. So let's take a short break here. When we come back, we will discuss why Western Kazakhstan, especially Aktu Bay, is so contentious. What makes the region different compared to other parts of Kazakhstan? Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Majlis, a Central Asia podcast at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Today we are discussing what happened in Aktu Bay on June 5 and why so many bad things are happening in and around that city in western Kazakhstan. Discussing the subject with me are Aygurim Tolukhanova, Kazakhstan reporter for the Convoy Bulletin, Norbert Besanov, Central Asia reporter for BNE Intelli News, and Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. I am Mohamed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Majlis. Now, this is the second such incident in Aktu Bay, Bruce. The city is also known as the only town in Kazakhstan where a suicide attack took place. And also, Aktu Bay is not far from Zhanaozen, another city in western Kazakhstan, which has seen similar bloody clashes in 2011. So why so many bad things are happening in western Kazakhstan? In fact, this is the title of your recent article on that subject. So what was your findings, Bruce, while looking into this subject?
Well, generally speaking, you know, that's where all the money is coming from for the Kazakh government. Not all, but most of the money, most of the revenues coming to the Kazakh government and going into the state budget are coming from the oil fields and gas fields in western Kazakhstan. And while we have a city like Astana, which was nothing 20 years ago, you know, now Astana's, they've poured billions and millions of dollars into it and fixed it up and built all these new fantastic architectural structures and everything. And Almaty, of course, is the commercial center, has also profited a lot from the oil and gas. The one area that hasn't really profited too much is western Kazakhstan, where all the money is coming from to begin with. So, you know, a lot of the people out there feel that the area has been neglected, even though they're bankrolling the whole country, that they don't have very much representation in government. I mean, they have local officials who are elected, and they have, you know, provincial or oblast leaders and everything, but they don't, if you look at the ministerial posts and other positions in the Kazakh government, the real power positions, they never seem to go to these people in the West. So they don't have much representation out there. You know, it's what in America, it's what we would call a blue collar area. You know, these are mostly essentially construction workers and stuff. And so they've been kind of left on the wayside while Kazakhstan has promoted this great image of its place in the world and you know, all these different events and forums and everything that they hold out there. They're always held in the East. They're trying to show that they're, you know, this sophisticated modern country and everything like that. But if you flew from Astana to Aktau or Atarau or Aktu Bay, you'd see a very different world very quickly. You know, in part that's because of the landscape and the climate out there. But they certainly not as much money as could have been invested has been invested into that part of the country. And I think the people there, to a large extent, are fairly resentful that the people in the East are getting rich at their expense, and they don't see very much of that at all.
Okay, so now what Bruce was saying, you know, the reason that the Western Kazakhstan, Aktobe in Zhanaozen and areas around these two cities is so contentious might be because of the social or economic situation, lack of development. What do you see behind this area of Kazakhstan being so explosive in compared to the other regions in the countries? What could be the possible reasons behind that?
I agree with what Bruce has just said. And as I said earlier, that diminishing economic opportunities in Kazakhstan, some observers believe that seem to have dent pre-existing fissures between regional elites and Astana, especially between these oil-rich western region and the central government. These regions are net contributors to the central government's budget, so they feel they're subsidizing their entire country. But they're also the ones which are suffering the consequences of the problems in the oil industry, such as layoffs of workers. And it is the local population in these regions which have to put up with the damage the oil and gas industry inflicts on the regional environment and on the health of the local population. So they feel very disenchanted. And if you, as Bruce said, if you go to the Western Kazakhstan, you will see bad roads, lack of water supplies, a lot of social problems, and it's very living, cost of living in these regions is very high because of geography and because of climate. So with Kazakh economy having the worst crisis since the late 90s, it, of course, all this is translating into open protest against the central government.
I agree. We discussed and kind of agreed that radicalism might not be the main factor behind what has happened there, as authorities allege, and we think that social and economic situation might be one reason behind all these developments. I want to get your opinion about another possible aspect of this. What does the ethnic landscape of the region tells us about the unrest? I mean, is there any possible connection between the unrest and ethnic makeup of Western Kazakhstan?
Well, I agree with other participants that it's mostly about economic and social problems. But I also think that it's a problem that we didn't really research enough the development of this radicalism in Kazakhstan, because people in Aktobe saying that it happens often. They hear, not always, but they hear of these terrorists in their region, and they just don't wonder if it happens next time. So I think the government needs to pay more attention to this development, to research the development of terrorism in Kazakhstan. And as far as about the region, I've talked to some researchers who studied Kazakh nationalism, extremism, and according to their studies, Western Kazakhstan and South Kazakhstan are more prone to express kind of ethnic Kazakh nationalism, and this may be one of the reasons too for radicalism, because Kazakhs traditionally think they are related to this religion, although some of them relate to Tengri religion, but still, these regions, Western and Southern, they are lacking attention from the authorities, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Bruce.
You know, just since we were talking about the ethnic factor, I would point out, and it really has nothing to do with the inhabitants of the permanent inhabitants of the region. But when we had the oil workers strike in Zhanaozen, and actually it was in many places in Western Kazakhstan in 2011, a lot of that started because the rumor went out that there are all these oil fields being worked, and in some places Chinese workers are working there, and in some places Turkish workers are working there too. And the strike started when the rumor got out that the Chinese oil workers were being paid more than the local workers were being paid. And that was one of the first things that, that really started the strike going. So it's not so much a question of the ethnic makeup of the, for lack of a better term, indigenous people, the actual citizens of Kazakhstan. I think, but they also see this discrepancy in income between them and the foreign workers who are being brought in to work at some of these oil sites too. So there's a feeling that among some of them that they become second-class citizens in their own country.
Norbert, do you have anything to add in the possibility of some ethnic makeup of the region might be playing, contributing to this tension in the region?
These regions are like their ethnic makeup is mostly Kazakh. So in Aqtobe region, it's over 80%. In Atrau and Aktau, it's near 90 or over 90%. Ethnic Kazakh, and as Bruce has just said, these regions where people see foreign workers, many foreign workers, because most of investment is going on there, and oil and gas industries there, and they do feel that the government in in Astana is doing more for foreigners in their region than for the local population. Yeah. And the another problem people complain is that, again, they're mostly ethnic Kazakhs there, but central government in Astana, it's mostly Russian-speaking, and it does seem to be addressing problems of people in countries east or north, and mostly Russian-speaking people. So there might be some element, some factor of ethnic tensions going on.
Thank you, Norbert. I think we should wrap up our discussion. As far as I understand so far, it seems that economic and social situation might be the cause for grievances of the people.
Can I ask Igorim one question?
Yeah, sure. Don't go on.
Before we leave, because Igorim, since you're out there today, how are people reacting to Nazarbayev's brief statement about the causes of this?
I would say people are pissed off because it's really confusing these last days, all of these announcements from authorities. It just really undermines totally undermines the trust to the government and shows that they are themselves don't know what's happening in their own country. So yeah, they just start to lose trust more and more.
Recently, Kazakhstan is seen to many developments. Most of them are not a positive one. So Nazarbayev's comment, you said, confused people even more. So what we can expect to happen going forward, Norbert?
To tell the truth, yes, Nazarbayev, after days of silence, tried to address people on the issue. But again, as the president of the country, he didn't offer a solution to the problem. He was talking in his usual style of talking people down. So unless the government starts to look into problems, potential roots of these problems, I'm afraid this sort of events would continue to take place. So the government, instead of talking about punishing those people and gaining some sort of stability in the region, the government has to be open to dialogue with people and discuss land issues, social issues, labor issues, all kinds of issues.
I think the authorities are already discussing the land reform issue with people, so it's not helping?
So far, the president imposed moratorium, but right, people are against any kind of sales to foreigners, or they think it's being done for the Chinese. So I think if the government wanted a real dialogue with people, they would have said, okay, we will abolish all these controversial amendments altogether. But what I think they're trying to do is to prepare people by the end of this year for these amendments, which again wouldn't solve the problem but postpone it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Bruce, finally, so if there's one thing Nazarbayev can do or should do, what that should be?
Well, I'm going to go along with Norbert here and say that, you know, that what he should do is ask the people to create some kind of civic forum that would speak on behalf of different regions in the country and different interests in the country and have that engage with government officials. You could see that as a stalling tactic, but that would be the way to kind of calm tensions. Unfortunately, I think what he will do and what he kind of indicated today in his brief statements was that a crackdown's coming, that they're going to rein in this lawlessness and this disorder, which is really confined to one very small place in Kazakhstan. But all the same, you know, with his talk about outside threats and colored revolutions and everything like that, I would imagine the security services and other law enforcement agencies are going to be working overtime for the next couple of months.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Final note from you. If there's one thing that Nazarbayev has to do, what that should be today?
I think that he should be more open to discussions, because I feel that maybe what that was the reason that he was late for 3 days to say anything about this terrorism act. People there are afraid to tell him because everything is fine in our country. And if you tell that it's not fine, I guess he will not be pleased. And I think that he should be more open to discussions and realize that this is a real world with many problems and that we have to solve it. And he recently said he ordered to kill all those attackers, but in the real world, you can't kill all of them. So you just need to be more realistic and more open to discussion.
Right. Very nice conclusion. Igrim Tuluhanova, Kazakhstan reporter for the Convoy Bulletin. Thank you for your participation in the Majlis today. Also, big thanks goes to Norbert Besanov, Central Asia reporter for BNA Intel News, and Bruce Panier, editor of Kishlak Awazi, Central Asia blog at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being part of the Majlis today.
Thank you.
I'm Mohamed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Bye-bye.